Nice, got my own.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so are there questions from the audience for the presenters?
Misha Chertkov, Los Alamos. Question to first speaker. Two of my countries, US and Russia, invested heavily in gas infrastructure. And there is quite a lot of energy you can store in the gas pipelines. So I wonder if you can comment on this option, if it is feasible, and how much we can count on that for power grid.
That's an interesting question. I've not studied that in terms of packing gas pipelines and the like. Deutsche Bank published a detailed study on energy storage in Europe about a year ago. They recommended, they went through the economics of the large-scale storage quite well. The one thing that they do recommend was R&D into methanation, the formation of natural gas and storing natural gas as a way to go forward. The economics of that in the Deutsche Bank study does not work today economically, but they think that's a ripe area for research.
Fernando Alvarado, Wisconsin. I have two questions for Jim and two questions for Elizabeth. For Jim, what impact will storage have on congestion and congestion patterns, and will headroom have to be allowed on congested lines, therefore reducing some of the available capacity, depending on where the storage is located?
So the
that was for Jim.
Sorry.
Yours is coming.
I didn't quite catch the second part.
Will you have to reduce the capacity of lines to allow headroom for when the storage comes in? Therefore, you're reducing the value of the transmission system by reducing the capacity available, since you now need that capacity to provide.
Well,
energy from the storage.
As you well know, it's a complex answer to that, and it's individual. I can think of two examples. There is quite a bit of thinking about transmission focused on wind in the U.S. Midwest and West, right? And since the capacity of an average wind farm is like 40%, building a transmission line to bringing that to Minneapolis or something, you'd like to load that line. And so there's a lot of thinking about integrating a storage facility right there to jack up the capacity factor of the line. So in other words, you overbuild the wind and store some of that energy, right? So in that case, you're controlling your destiny on a specific line. If you look at Southern California, this pump storage facility, it's quite complex. There's multiple lines in a network. You have wind farms, there's a couple of gigawatts of solar. So it's quite, how to manage that is quite a complex answer, and congestion obviously will be an issue. One of the interesting things, if you go through the economics of that plant, energy is a small part of the economics. They actually do, by buying energy at night and selling it in a day, you don't make any money that way. So you need fast response storage so you can do ancillary services. The most valuable thing that they have there is ramping services. And there's a lot of concern about, in California, when the fall off of the afternoon and solar, and the ramp rate to keep up with that is going to be extremely challenging. And that's the essence of the new product that the CAISO is trying to develop, right? So how to balance all of that is quite a tricky problem. So good news for you guys.
Research opportunities.
Yeah, exactly my point.
now for Elizabeth, Will time of use rates start adapting and changing in response to great penetration of photovoltaics? All of a sudden, the utilities say, "Hey, wait a minute, this time of use needs to change. Now our peak is, you know, at a different time." And the second question is, I am aware that some of the electric vehicles, Tesla, are specifically integrating extremely sophisticated charging mechanisms. You can program the car already very well on when to charge, how to charge, considering your rate structure. How would you integrate that into your thinking?
Two questions. Elizabeth Ratnam, sorry, the first question, just trying to recall what you said, the first question.
Well, the first question was, do you expect that utilities will, as soon as you're successful with your time of use adaptive program to save money, next year they change it because all of a sudden now they've incentivized too much delivery of power at night. That's the first question.
Yes, so the time of use, my future work, I'm planning to look at sort of dynamic day ahead forecasts. And in the paper itself, it doesn't look at just time of use pricing. I've just used that as an illustrative example. But essentially, I expect it to change. And that's the quadratic program. I'm looking at a control problem, so a receding horizon control problem, where you would update based on pricing information how you would schedule the battery. Does that answer your question?
My second question, it basically, you're using time or use pricing as an example of how you can... dynamic pricing,
yes.
But your approach is more general. If it changes, your programming will change.
Yes, definitely the paper caters for all of those scenarios.
And the second one was really more a comment. If you have a smart car with already smart charging, I presume your methods for managing the rest of the storage will integrate into whatever the car is doing.
So the motivation behind my paper was, if you did have an electric vehicle, would you want to use a percentage of that electric vehicle to schedule it, so vehicle-to-grid integration? So it is like essentially an algorithm for how to do that optimally based on costing of electricity, but also, I suppose it's an approach, probably an alternate approach to what they've proposed.
Okay, thank you.
No worries.
Speak Australian.
Claudio Canizares, University of Waterloo. I have a question for the third paper. Well, a few questions, but let me see if I got this clear. You assume that the cost of battery is a certain amount of kilowatt per hour, right?
So I don't assume the cost. I say you give me the cost because, as we've seen earlier,
fair enough,
they've changed.
So you assume that, and you assume that to be constant, correct?
No, I can. You can insert in the paper any cost of battery, and I'll find you the most cost-effective battery. So it's very general.
But what I mean is, you don't change it with the capacity of the battery in terms of.
Yes, I can. Yes.
Well, it's a kilowatt hour. I understand that, but. And I guess you could, but in your examples, you looked at
my examples. I kept it really simple, but in the paper, it definitely considers different costs of battery.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. The other question I had is, why use a quadratic programming approach as opposed to just minimizing costs? Yeah.
So my motivation wasn't actually reducing the cost of electricity for the customer. It was a trade-off between the utility and the customer. So by minimizing pi squared, the grid usage squared, the aim was to alleviate the grid from voltage issues for voltage rise and peak power and all those things. And if we can help the utility, because I'm assuming cost in a dynamic sense in the future would actually cost it a lot higher for those situations. So it kind of is a trade-off between the two, utility.
Fair enough, thank you. And my last question is, could you modify your model so actually the program tells you what instead of doing a heuristic search, can you modify the technique so you can look at actually the program telling you, or the optimization telling you the capacity, the optimal capacity of your...
That was system? Our plan for our next paper, essentially.
Thanks.
No worries. Can I just make one more comment? I suppose the reason we used the heuristic approach was just to see if there was any benefit at all before we went through the process of finding the actual optimal. Because when I started this about a year ago, batteries were expensive. Everyone was saying they weren't going to essentially work because of the cost. And in the last 12 months, we've actually seen advertisements now on TV for residents to actually buy batteries. in the house. So it's changed quite a lot in the last 12 months. Thank you.
State my name, Bernie. Bernie Lucert, University of Wisconsin. Actually, I was prepared to ask this question, but it's related to what Liz just said, and I was wondering if the other panelists could comment on the same thing, or specifically the difficulty in anticipating future technology adoption. So Jim mentioned about what's in the pipeline or what people are studying now, and Liz was just talking about, we didn't expect batteries to be online, but now they're coming very quickly. So from both the consumer perspective and from, say, a utility perspective, how do you make long-term decisions with such uncertainty in technology adoption? And that? So I'll ask that to the panel.
Well, clearly, as I pointed out, there's a huge amount of work going on in batteries right now. The progress and the investment in lithium-ion batteries is particularly spectacular. So you can anticipate really dramatic cost reductions in the next several years. They're very well suited for the power applications that we talked about. Because of their high C rates and discharge rates. You're certainly going to see this. Now, we just pointed out that every middle-class house in India has a UPS system and a battery already, right? So we're not just talking about the two-thirds of the world doesn't have the developed world that U.S., and Europe, and Australia share, right? So the creation of an energy battery that works and lasts 10, 20 years is a critical technology issue for the developing world. So we're going to see this happen. A lot of the developing world will be built around microgrids in Africa. So this energy storage is critically important. And once we get the economics right, these microgrids will proliferate. We have an investment in a company in India that's doing solar powered cell phone towers. And they did 3,000 or 4,000 systems last year because displacing diesel in remote locations is a no-brainer in terms of return on investment. So we'll see how it evolves in the U.S. and that. But I my own take on this is if you have a solar roof, you're going to put a battery in your house. It's just kind of the way people think about things, and you want to be able to charge Fernando's Tesla over here off of his own roof, because I know how he thinks about the world. Yeah, so I think it goes hand in hand once the economics go right. I received a business plan yesterday on a company that has exactly that product, right? It's a household unit. You can plug the solar in here. It's got the batteries in the rack. You can get lithium batteries or lead acid right now. So you're going to see a lot more of that.
So Frau Goldewurtel, ETH Zurich. I think there is no general answer, like what is the best investment strategy for all countries. I think, as you pointed out before, one has to distinguish between developing countries where there are certain situations. Europe is different, the US is different again. So I think what you have to do is to see what you have in a particular country, and then go from there and start investing. It's not a one point in time where you make a decision. You actually start investing in some infrastructure. Let's say we have a large penetration of plug-in electric vehicles at some point because you've decided to go for that. Then it also opens up more possibilities as you go, right? So you always have to keep on looking at the situation in your country, and you have to constantly be evaluating what you're doing. I think this is a very complex question. You have to look at it over and over again.
Elizabeth Ratnam. So we've seen from the distribution utilities in Australia The more rural the network, the more weak the grid, the higher the benefit for battery storage, especially when they're putting PV in the grid because of voltage rise and things like that. So in the north of Australia, we have what we call a SWER network, single phase earth return. And it costs a lot of money to build the distribution grid out there. And so for probably 10 years at least, if not longer, they've looked at alternate solutions to actually increasing the distribution grid. So they've looked at fuel cells and batteries, and they've actually installed them in the grid there. But I suppose the panel have said, it depends on the situation, where you are. I know for a fact in Africa, I've got a friend that sells PV and batteries as a business model because they can't, they don't have any connection to the grid, and that provides them with a way of charging their phone instead of having to walk a day or so, which is the case in a lot of places there. So it depends on the situation. Thank you.
Well, I think David had a question. I'll just comment while David's getting the microphone that my first job after graduating as a young electrical engineer was designing these single wire earth return systems where there was one consumer per 50 to 100 kilometers
wow.
of wire.
Wow.
So it makes sense to look at doing other things. So, don't forget to say that.
What was it again?
David.
David Hill from University of Sydney, similarly University of Hong Kong. I have a question for the second speaker. There's a general question of people responding to price signals versus more interventionist control as a means of achieving everything with demand response and storage. And so I wonder if you have a general comment about how those two mechanisms could interplay with each other. But you showed some specific graphs, which I can't find in the paper, just at a quick glance, where I thought you were comparing price-based mechanisms and a control-based mechanism. Is that right, with the commercial buildings? And so maybe you could use that to illustrate your general comment.
Okay, so your question is, what is the... Sorry, Frau Goldewurtel, ETH Zurich. I was actually surprised that people don't get this right, saying their name at the beginning, and now I'm doing the same mistake. So, so to your question, what was it actually that you're asking about the difference between price based?
Can we solve everything with the right price based, giving the right price to
okay.
people, or do we need a mix and match of that with control intervention?
Okay. Thank you. So the picture is actually in the paper. So you can find it. It's a long paper, so no worries. what we did there was we compared the case where you're sending a price signal to all of the buildings, and then all of them react to that price signal, with the case where you have an aggregator, and the aggregator solves the central problem for all of the buildings which are taking part in that aggregation. So now if you solve it centrally, obviously you have all information available, and you can make the best decision possible, theoretically. However, this is not fair to assume, because people will not possibly give you all information. So this would require lots of communication throughout the day. So you would take measurements at each building, communicate it back and forth. And that is why we said, okay, we want to solve the centralized problem first to see what we can achieve at best in this setup, and whether our aggregation can actually fulfill this requirement, that it can actually balance out everything. And as you saw, it was this straight line, so it worked out, so the aggregation is capable of doing it. But then we said, you might actually think of setups where you're just communicating information once a day, and you're storing information a priori at the aggregator. So for example, you could think of things like storing sensitivities to price signals, and then given this information at the aggregator, you could, and giving a measurement day ahead, you could then, as you go throughout the day, the aggregator could basically make up his mind which price signal to communicate. So there is a lots of different things you can imagine. And I think this is an important research field, and it's not clear like what people are willing to accept in terms of measurements and how many measurements are possible.
You just set up a lot of my problems for me. All right, thank you. For Elizabeth, can I ask a question for Elizabeth at the same stand, or we have time?
That'll have to be the last question.
Oh, well, just quickly then. Is there any benefit, Elizabeth? Oh, by the way, I know you're an Aussie and I should praise Aussies, but I really like your framework and I think there's a lot of potential there. Is there any benefit in looking at more general H matrices, and is there any, this sounds like an adaptive control problem to me in some sense. So as following Fernando's comment, you're going to have these H's chasing changing situations.
So I'm looking at game theory to look at the financial aspect, I suppose, in my future work, as well as looking at uncertainty in the predictions for load and generation with a model predictive control framework. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, well,
thank you.
Okay, so I've closed this half of the session right now. Coffee time, and then we will reform at 10 o'clock for the second half of the session.